Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Living a Richer Life, life-changing talk radio, a place where like-minded people from across the country come to listen, share, and learn from topics that deal with their health, wealth, hope, and prosperity. You can participate by sharing your comments or questions from the Richer Life blog page or chat room at www.blogtalkradio.com/richerlife or by using the phone to call in. Let's join the show.
And good evening. This is Charlotte Grant Cobb.
And this is Earl Cobb.
Our theme for tonight's show is how to end destructive conflict in your life.
Conflict results from real or perceived opposition to one's values, actions, desires, or general interests. Conflicts may occur internally or externally between individuals or groups. Constructive conflict refers to conflict in which the benefits exceed the costs. It generates productive, mutually beneficial, and shared decisions. While destructive conflict often flows from narrowly defined or rigid goals and most often produces negative results. Individuals involved in negative conflict become less flexible and assume that the opposing party must suffer defeat. Involved parties succumb to personal attacks, threats, and a tone of hostility. How can you determine at the start if a conflict in your life is constructive or destructive? If it is destructive, do you know how to end it without any or much damage?
And we are delighted to have with us tonight Patricia M. Porter. Patricia Porter has worked extensively in the dispute resolution field since 1994, working with leaders in U.S. organizations such as Coca-Cola Enterprises and NASA, the Texas Department of Transportation, the Department of Homeland Security, and Fortune 500 companies. She's a faculty member at Southern Methodist University, teaching in the Graduate Dispute Resolution Program. Patricia is the founder and president of Conflict Connections, Inc., and has been the host of the Texas Conflict Coach radio program since 2009. She is also the author of Stop the Dreaded Drama, 55 Tips for Ending Destructive Conflict. Welcome, Patty, to Living a Richer Life.
Well, I'm very excited to be on your program tonight, so thank you for letting me be part of your family.
Well, thank you, and we will begin our interview with Patty Porter and our discussion on how to end destructive conflicts in your life right after this message.
You're listening to Living a Richer Life, life-changing talk radio. We will open the phone lines at 25 minutes after the hour. Our toll-free number is 855-345-4714. You can also join the discussion via the blog page and on our chat room at blogtalkradio.com/richerlife. Now back to tonight's show.
And welcome back. Our theme tonight is how to end destructive conflict in your life. And our interview guest is Patty Porter, founder and president of Conflict Connections, the host of the Texas Conflict Coach radio program, and also the author of Stop the Dreaded Drama, 55 Tips for Ending Destructive Conflict. And Patty, you know we are so glad that you're with us tonight. Let's start the show, as we traditionally do, by having you share a little bit about yourself with us. Where did you grow up, and how did you arrive at your current place in life?
Well, I did grow up in on the border of Mexico, in the very southern tip of Texas. It's known as the Rio Grande Valley there. And I actually grew up with my grandmother and my three sisters, that time of our life was very tumultuous, and so we grew up in a very highly charged, high-conflict family with a lot of family dynamics. Who doesn't nowadays? And because of our unique circumstances growing up with not having met my mother until I was 27 years old, knowing my father kind of in and out of our lives, I grew to be wanting to be a peacekeeper in my family, to drive to help, to keep the peace, making sure everything is just, quiet and, not in such a high conflict place. And yet, I learned to be a really huge conflict avoider. And as I become an adult, or early adult, my pattern was I was always avoiding conflict. I hated conflict. I didn't want it. I had enough of it in my life as growing up as a child. Mm-hmm. And eventually, I knew as I went through my bachelor's degree that I really wanted to go into the helping profession. I wanted to help other families and other people who had these kinds of high conflict issues. But I didn't know about mediation. I didn't know about conflict coaching, any of those things. So I knew I was going to go into the counseling program. And it was around that time period, I knew that I wanted to probably get my license as a clinical social worker, but there's so many areas mm-hmm. in which to help people. And one day I was doing volunteer casework for a family, and they had a presenter come out. And it was during that presentation that she was talking about the work she did in conflict, specifically in the schools. And she introduced the concept to me of mediation. And as she described, by the end of the hour, I literally had this physical sensation mm-hmm. of a light shining over me, and what I would call, you know, my higher faith, God saying, you must mm-hmm. be doing this.
It's the calling.
It was, yeah. I mean, literally, it was that mm-hmm. intense. And as soon as that happened, I went up to this woman and I said, I want to know everything about what you're doing. And so I was working full-time, I was going to school part-time, finishing up my degree, and then I practically worked full-time volunteering for her in the schools, working with teachers, parents, and children to know everything about mediation. And that was back in 1993-94. And okay. everything from that point, from that day on, whether I was studying in class, I would make all my papers about conflict or violence or anything of that nature. And that is when my career started, is at that point, and it's grown from that over the years.
Oh, very good. You know, Patty, I love what you're saying about the calling, because that makes a put some clarity in your life, and obviously it shows through how you are committed to this idea of mediation. So our theme tonight is how to end destructive conflict in your life. And, you know, we could spend time just deconstructing the phrase destructive conflict in your life.
But that's for sure.
Yes, for sure. But how would you define destructive conflict?
Well, first of all, destructive conflict is usually very emotionally charged. And how I would define it is okay. these reactions. In other words, we make unconscious, oftentimes not a choice, but we react to okay. perceived threats. And so that could show up in different ways. A lot of times people think destructive conflict means, you know, you're hostile, you're blaming, you're calling people names, and you're out there. Everyone sees it. Destructive conflict can also be where we are avoiding conflict as a default. We don't address mm-hmm. it. We don't deal with it. People then start to not trust, especially like, for example, in the workplace, if I'm a leader and I'm constantly avoiding conflict, then the people that I lead are like, I can't trust you, you're mm-hmm. weak, you're not standing up for us, you know, we need you to help us resolve conflict, and then it starts to also become very damaging. So it's really the things we see and the things we don't see that can be very destructive, involving very intense emotions.
You know, that's so important, and I know just with what you were saying, most people in the workplace have had an experience with conflict avoidance from leadership, and it can be extremely destructive, leads to lack of trust, and so you are obviously picked a field where people are coming to you with all of those emotions, and yet you have continued to work extensively in this area. I can understand from what you said at the beginning of why you got into it, but what in the world motivates you to continue working so extensively in this area?
You know, I didn't have that same help when I was young, and I was in a lot of angst. I was in a lot of fear. I was a lot of times in a lot of pain, emotional pain, and mm-hmm. And I, you know, what keeps motivating me is to help people take off their blinders, to mm-hmm. help people not be afraid, because when we're afraid, we either lash out or we hide. And so how can we be fearless and confident and competent in how we see conflict, not as not as this evil person on the other side, because they're human with frailties and triggers and emotions and experiences other than our own, and how can I help people get through that angst so that they're not in so much distress anymore? How can they grow from that? How can they see it as a potential opportunity? And so that keeps motivating me, because as I work with individuals and I start to see that transition, and they start to see what contribution they had to it, however small, you know, it could be a 2% mm-hmm. contribution, but they own that, and then they start to see the other person as human, and they start to say, okay, I can be a little bit more compassionate, I can be a little bit more empathetic to the other, to the situation or to the person, and that is really wonderful work, but boy, challenging work.
I can imagine, and in that vein, I almost want to put a label on the show, do not try this at home. Patty, you have a lot of credentials. You hold a license as a clinical social worker, a designation from the Association of Conflict Resolution. You're a distinguished mediator and credentialed by the Texas Mediator Credentialing Association. Why is this level of training so necessary to effectively deal with conflict resolution?
So I want to address that question, and I want to clarify mm-hmm. something. So I provide a range of conflict management interventions. And what that means is, and I mostly am in the workplace, so I don't work exclusively with families anymore. I work exclusively in a workplace setting. So it doesn't matter the setting. It could be a small business, family business, whatever. So when they call me for a conflict, they usually call and say, we have a problem, and usually they'll say, can you provide training? and that's not going to solve the problem. So I do a conflict assessment, and based on that assessment of what's really going on, we'll determine what intervention I'll do. Is it mediation? Is it conflict coaching one-on-one? Is it a team intervention? Is it, you know, some other type of – so those are the areas of intervention I might be doing. So when we talk about the level of training and credentialing, the first thing I learned as a social worker in social work school is first do no harm. And if you're going to do this level of work, because conflict is personal, it's interpersonal. Now, I'm not talking about contract negotiations and things of that nature. I'm talking about generally interpersonal conflict where it impacts team relationships, boss-supervisor relationships, your neighbor relationship with your neighbor. I mean, it's how we perceive and engage and see the other person, and based on that perception we'll determine. So the first thing is do no harm. And the thing about it is because we're dealing with very difficult things, a lot of times people don't come to me until the conflict has been going on sometimes for years.
Wow.
So with that level of complexity on some of these things, you cannot go into it blind or uneducated in terms of your training and what it is you're doing regarding understanding conflict and analyzing it and then intervening.
Good point. Very good point. And again, do not try this at home, because you're right. I think the other word for what you're saying too is the concept that these things brew, and just sort of ferment. I think anybody who's been in difficult workplace scenarios can attest to some of this. And what we are used to seeing is, I think, what you have termed the dreaded drama. I think that is what a lot of people associate conflict with. So why do you call being involved in destructive conflict dreaded drama? I have my own thoughts, but I'd love to hear yours.
Yeah, I mean, well, because first of all, the mantra that I hear from people is, I hate conflict. I just don't want to be in conflict. I want everyone to get along. I want everyone to be happy. You know, you hear all those things, and you're like, okay, is that realistic? I mean, conflict is natural.
And is that really what you want?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And the thing about it is because a lot of people don't have the skills or strategies to know how to deal with conflict when it's at them, it's usually very reactionary. And so it causes a lot of pain. It causes a lot of distress. It causes a lot of angst. People get very fearful. And then it starts in a shouting match, or, you know, I'm the victim, and the blaming, and no one taking accountability. And unless you know to understand the dynamics of it and what we're really talking about, then it does become a drama. And, in fact, when I was writing this book, I, you know, asked a lot of friends and neighbors who weren't in the field of what I did at all, and I said, you know, when you think about conflict, you know, what are the adjectives that come to mind? And the one that came coming to mind was drama. And I thought, I've got to name the book Stop the Dreaded Drama.
That's so very appropriate, and I think it's something that people will attach to right away. In your book, Stop the Dreaded Drama, 55 Tips for Ending Destructive Conflict, you did a great job of sort of breaking this down into seven sections and then grouping the 55 tips under these wonderful strategies. So among our discussion tonight, I think we're going to try to frame it around the sections of your book, but I also want you to feel really free in sharing some examples that you've used without violating any confidences, of course. But the first section is analyze the conflict. And quite frankly, Patty, you know, you address this in the section of your book, but I believe that analyzing the drama as the initial step is not something that we do naturally. Yes, you were talking about our first response is to react. So talk a little bit about why this analyzing is the most important, or one of the most important steps.
So I want you to think about a hurricane, all right? So I, having grown up on the Texas coast, grew up with hurricanes. And I remember as a child, way back when, the weatherman would say, there's a tropical disturbance on the coast of Africa. And I'm like, who cares? That's like, well, that's like another planet, right? So I'm not even paying attention that there's a possible signal there that there is potential conflict. And then, you know, a couple days later, you turn back on the weather, and the weatherman goes, now we have a tropical wave, right? And it's a little bit closer getting toward the United States. And then, you know, and no one's still really paying too much attention to it until it finally becomes a tropical storm. And now it's over the coast of Puerto Rico or Cuba, and everyone's got their little charts out. Back then we had little charts. You know, we didn't have the computers. And we would mark with a pen on the chart, tracking it. Where is it going? Which way? Which direction? And so we were analyzing, you know, everyone was really getting serious. We're analyzing, you know, how big is it? How fast is it going? Is the trade winds turning in a different direction? And so in analyzing that hurricane, you know, the weathermen did so well in us, and us people who, you know, don't know anything about the weather very well, we're like, okay, you know, should we go to the grocery store and get water and batteries and boards to board up our windows and, you know, all of those things? Should we be doing that now? Oh, no, we're not going to worry about it because, you know, it never comes this way. And so it gets closer and closer, and now it's in the Gulf of Mexico, and it's a hurricane, it's a Category 2, and everyone's like, oh, well, okay, let's rush to the stores and get all our supplies. And then they sit in the yard, and we're still not doing anything with it. And then every day, they start to panic, and they're like, oh, we see it in front of us, but we're not going to do anything about it. Yeah, it's not going to really hit us. Mm. Oh, let's have a hurricane party. So the thing about it is that we might first ignore it, then it starts to get in our backyard or front yard, and then we're like, oh, well, maybe it really is here. And then we're like, well, did we really do anything about it? And we've heard over the years how people have died, they've totally dismissed it, they've done all of these things. And so with destructive conflict, you know, just like a destructive storm, there are things we can do to limit the damage that it can cause if we respond to it, if we make some choices around that. And so if we're already in a destructive conflict, we're in this whirlwind, this cycle, this hurricane, it's when if we're saying, stop, I don't want to be in this conflict anymore, the first thing is to step out of it. You know, get in the eye of the storm, get out of the storm, go to the shelter, but get out of it, step back. So the first thing I say is step back, don't react. We need to slow down, not be engaged in a reactive argument, and really start to think about our thinking when we're in this destructive conflict. We can't do that if we're in the moment, you know, shouting at each other or pointing fingers.
Mm-hmm.
So very important. I don't know if that analogy helped or not, but
it definitely helped me. I can use that's such a visual, and how often not just the visual, but also how often we ignore the warning. So I kind of wanted to talk a little bit about that because your second section talked about overcoming conflict dread. So I'm going to ask you, because here someone's telling us a storm's coming, and but something in us says my response to this knowledge is avoidance. Is that what you mean by overcoming conflict dread?
Well, part of that is how to, well, first of all, the dread. So when you hear the word dread, I dread X, what does
mm-hmm.
that mean for you?
Well, for me, it means a little trepidation and something I just really don't want to do. I want to put it off as long as I can.
Yes, there's some anxiety around it. There's
mm-hmm.
some intense fear around it. And, of course, a hurricane is coming, and that can be very scary. What does that mean for my family? Are they going to be safe? And the same thing with that. And part of it is that one of the biggest keys to effectively dealing with conflict early on, and I know we're talking about we're already in it and it's destructive, but the one of the earliest keys is to recognize not only the signs that it's coming,
mm-hmm.
The signs in the other person and the signs in myself. So one of the tips in the, you know, how do we overcome this fear is, one, to recognize and name the fact that we are having fear, that we're uncomfortable, that we're in distress, is naming that. And part of that is, tip number 10 says to identify the threat. So if I'm stepping back and I'm saying, whoa, horsey, I'm not going to talk to you, give me a week, I'll get back to you, give yourself some space, and then say, what is this hot button for me? It's what we call hot buttons or triggers. So
right.
A hot button is something that someone says or doesn't say or do, that sends you to the moon in like 2 seconds flat. You know, you're like, oh, I
yes.
see red, I see purple, I can't stand you. But it happens very quickly, and it's happening, you're emotionally reacting it inside your brain. And usually a trigger could be some part of your identity. If someone says, if you say to yourself, I'm a wonderful wife and mother, and then someone comes up to you and say, you're a horrible wife, you're a horrible mother, it automatically triggers your
yes.
self-identity of being an important, you know, loving mother, wife. Or your values. If you're someone who says, I'm very respectful to people, I'm a good listener, whatever some of those values, integrity, honesty, respect, all of those things, and then someone challenges you and says, oh, you have no integrity. I just, you know, and then they're accusing you, you're going to be triggered. That's that hot button. But everyone's hot button is not the same. So I usually tell people, you installed your hot button. You have
mm-hmm.
to learn how to control it.
Oh, well said. Well said. And it's interesting when we're talking about analyzing the conflict before, some of that is about analyzing our own hot buttons and, you know, managing our own selves before anything becomes destructive, correct?
Exactly. You have to own your part in the conflict,
mm-hmm.
however small that is. And part of that is, one, identifying what is it that the person said or did that, you know, triggered us, and owning
mm-hmm.
our own stuff, our own trigger, because like I said, we installed it. And just because someone pushed it, because someone will say, well, they know about my hot buttons and they still push them anyway. Okay.
Exactly. Oh, I hear
right?
that.
But you still
yes.
have to control your own thinking and emotion around that.
Very good. So, you know, part of what you talk about, too, is this importance of perspective. Now, you know, in our work, we see perspective in a couple of ways. One, perspective from yourself, your own perspective and knowledge about a situation, but also understanding someone else's perspective. And you share that perspective is what moves the process forward. So now we're at this point where there is a way to move the process forward. Look, can we talk a little bit about that? Because, you know, oftentimes I know personally I've gotten stuck way back on the analyze the conflict.
You know, Perspective is not about agreeing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Perspective is about understanding where the person is coming from, listening for where the person's coming from their experiences, their beliefs. It's about being curious, authentically curious about why do you do what you do or why did you say what you said, even if you really don't like that person, because you might need that person in some way or another to be able to do what you need to do. So you don't like your boss. And you're like, I despise him, I hate him, he's a jerk, he's this, he's that. And yet you cannot have a job there and because he or she is going to supervise you. So he needs you and you need him. And so what do you do to try to gain perspective by listening, by being aware despite the differences? So it's about understanding, not necessarily agreeing with their perspective.
Very good.
Yeah, so that's a big distinction right there. So being open to perspective is one of the tips, and being curious is another tip. And being curious means ask questions to understand their point of view. In other words, what's their story? What is their story? It's like when you go to a movie, you know, we all go to movies, most of us. And if it's a really good movie, we're sitting there in that chair and we're eating that popcorn and we're watching it and we feel like we're in the screen with them, right? We feel their feelings. We're like, oh, my God, I can sense that fear or that happiness or whatever. And when the movie is that good that it pulls you in, it's like we're watching or listening to their movie. We're part of that person we're in conflict, we're part of their movie. If we're curious enough to listen to their story and to be part of that story, to understand from a more compassionate place, although we still don't have to agree.
Absolutely. Oh, Patty, I've got to tell you, I can't believe the time. It's almost 25 minutes after the hour. We are going to take a quick break here. And when we return, thank you. And thank you so much for what you're sharing with us. This is very important information. When we return, we're going to continue our discussion with Patty Porter and how you can successfully end destructive conflicts in your life. We're also going to open up the phone lines and take comments and questions from our listening audience at the time. Just remember to press the number 1 on your keypad if you have a question or comment. You can also meet us on the blog, talkradio.com/richerlifechatline. Email us at info@richerlife.llc.com or send us a tweet at @richerlifetalk. We will be back right after this message.
Don't forget to join us again next Thursday night, July 16th. The theme for next week's show will be social media's effect on you and our society, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Our very special interview guest will be Dr. D. Anthony Miles, entrepreneur, award-winning researcher, professor, legal expert, and the author of Risk Factors and Business Models, Understanding the 5 Forces of Entrepreneurial Risks and the Causes of Business Failure, only here on blogtalkradio.com/richerlife.
And welcome back. Our theme tonight is how to end destructive conflict in your life, and our interview guest is Patricia M. Porter, founder and president of Conflict Connections and the host of the Texas Conflict Coach radio program, and also the author of Stop the Dreaded Drama, 55 Tips for Ending Destructive Conflict. Patricia, before we go back into our conversation, I'm wondering, Earl, do we have any questions or comments at this time for callers or listeners in the chat room? Abby, are you with us?
Hi, yes, I'm with you.
Hi, Abby. Welcome to Living a Richer Life, Life-Changing Talk Radio. You have a question or comment for Patty?
Yes, I do. I'm actually Patty's apprentice, and I've been with her for 7 months now, and I still feel like I learned so much from you, Patty. This is awesome. But I did have a question. I want to ask you, do you find that people struggle the most with taking ownership in the conflict? And if so, and when you're in your mediations, how do you handle those people who are struggling to take ownership of their contribution to the conflict?
You know, that's a really good question. And Abby, thank you for being so supportive of tonight. You know, ownership is one of the biggest things that causes a lot of conflicts to get stuck. Because when we're focused so much on blaming the other person, on focus, pointing those fingers, because it's so painful to us. We can't. It's really hard for us to look within to see what did we contribute to this, because we feel like oftentimes the victim of that situation. And and that shows up regardless of what intervention I'm using, coaching or mediation or team group intervention. So a lot of times when people are like, well, why am I here? Meaning, why am I in mediation? Why am I in coaching? Why isn't the other person in here? And part of, they're like, this is not my problem. I didn't cause the problem. They're the problem, right? That's what they'll usually say. And I'll say, you know what? How does this problem impact you? And then they go on, oh, I hate coming to work. I ignore my neighbor, and I don't talk to my husband. And so they talk and talk and talk about how this impacts them and how much angst they are in, or, you know, how, you know, they just hate that this is going on. And so I say, so if this is really impacting you, it sounds like part of moving forward is to really be heard and understood, because that's one of the things people want to feel, and is to be heard and understood. But that means the other person wants to be heard and understood and to be part of the solution. So part of it is looking at, what do you think, what did you notice in the other person when they started reacting, and getting them to observe that? And what do you think might have been happening in that moment that they were reacting to? And then they start to reflect on, well, I guess I was sarcastic right before, you know, they started shouting and pointing fingers at me. And then they're like, well, I guess I did have some tiny contribution. And eventually, depending on how much work you're doing with them, they start to look at, well, yeah, I guess I did contribute to that. So there's very specific strategies and techniques to get them to look at it, not from a blaming standpoint, not from a, well, you need to take ownership and, you know, blame yourself. It's really about how this is impacting them and how can they be part of helping the situation move along.
Thank you.
That's a very good answer. And I was going to ask both of you, because you're working in work environments, and sometimes I think work is sort of like the get-out-of-jail-free card for Monopoly. It's almost like it's the boss's responsibility to fix all the conflict. And to your point, Abby, about ownership, is it more difficult or challenging to get real ownership when it's in a work environment, or is it easier, or is that a fair question?
I think it's actually more difficult, because I think people often, in my experience, I found that people often don't like to take ownership, or they don't realize like that they contributed to this at all, and they like to point fingers. And so, but in some areas where I have worked where there has been a huge lack, or people take ownership and they agree with it, I think they move, it's easier to move forward. But I find that it's oftentimes harder to take ownership in workplaces, complex, because there's so many people
involved. Actually, I wanted to share a resource with you, if that's okay, Charlotte.
Mm-hmm, please.
This comes right to the heart of accountability and ownership, and that is Brené, B-R-E-N-E, Brown's. She has a number of, on YouTube, on her channel, she has a number of very short video segments, and one of them is on blame and shame. And it's a beautiful cartoon illustration that talks about what happens with blame and shame, and where that's coming from when people are not taking ownership of their contribution in that situation.
That is very meaningful, and I'm going to just expound on that a little bit and just talk about teams, because there's, you know, so much emphasis in from employers and working in teams, but teams are maybe one of the most difficult constructs for people. Do you have any ways of helping individuals prepare for what it takes to move to be a part of a team without destructive behavior and conflicts?
Well, the interesting thing about group intervention, that's when you go in and you're facilitating, it's not necessarily team building. Team building is, you know, we're building an existing constructive process. Group intervention is where they're in dysfunction, they're in angst, they are not getting along, they're pointing fingers, and so they really are at a group intervention place. And so part of that is there's a great deal of prep work as when you go in as a facilitator with a team to be very clear about, one, do an assessment of what are the issues. Are we really talking about a whole team issue? Are we talking about two people on the team who aren't getting along and then they're creating polarization within the team? Or are we talking about a team who's not getting along with a boss and the boss is like, oh, my team doesn't get along but doesn't realize that he or she is actually the problem.
Is contributing.
Yes, hugely.
Okay.
And so part of the prep work is sometimes I will send out an assessment questionnaire that asks very pointed, powerful questions about what is the thing that you're not saying that you really wish you could say? And I don't mean in a destructive way, but what is the angst that you're not sharing? What is the thing that goes unanswered for you, those questions
okay.
that are begged to be asked, but no one is asking them. So I'm asking these questions for them to complete. Then they send it to me anonymously and privately. I look at that and analyze that and then design a process in which to set a safe environment and make space for people to be heard and understood with these key messages and having these questions answered, and then really, so doing a lot of prep work myself, but also helping them to prepare how to participate in that kind of intervention. And it's the same thing with one-on-one coaching and all that too. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, Abby, thank you so much for taking the time to call in. That was great, great topic, great
thanks.
Conversation starter.
Thank you,
absolutely.
Abby.
Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. You know, Patty, Abby's question also and your responses also sort of gets into your section on preparing for difficult conversations. And, you know, what I found so interesting about that was similar to what you were saying in your assessment process. All of us who are looking at preparing for a difficult conversation in a potentially destructive conflict, we all have to know what we want to happen. And I think that's sort of it's sort of an interesting idea. I'm not sure that we always think about there's an outcome. What do I want the outcome to be? Do you find that you have to help people even understand what they want out of the resolution?
Absolutely. And also want to clarify that sometimes it's not a resolution they want. What they want is to be heard and understood. What they want is to have the person see them as a person, as a human. Sometimes what they want is just to be able to vent and share their frustration, to be understood. And of course, the resolution would be, you know, let's not have any more conflict. But it's not your typical resolution like you might find, you know, let's say in a mediation agreement. But being prepared, if you're not prepared, you'll be easily triggered and then emotionally react versus respond, and then it just goes downhill very quickly. And so a lot of my coaching work is about spending sometimes hours coaching around what is your body language saying, what's your face language saying, what's your tone. If someone says, well, I really want to remain calm and friendly and respectful in this conversation, I'm going to say, well, what does that look like? Because I'm going to watch you, and I'm going to give you feedback if you're not doing that. So someone and says they would describe what that looked like, and then they would practice what some of their messages were that were important to deliver. And then I would give them feedback and say, you know, I'm hearing that you're calm, and yet I heard a little bit of a sarcastic, biting tone there, and I'm wondering if you were sensing that yourself. So it's not a judgment, but it's about giving that feedback. Now, the other thing they have to be prepared for is a couple of other things, too, and that is, what will you say or do that will trigger the other person? So
yes,
if you know that every time you say X and that just sets them off and you're using it as a manipulation tactic, then be aware not to do that.
Don't say X, exactly. I think we have another email. Earl, do we have time for another email?
Hi, Charlotte and Patty. We sure do. I wanted to get this one in. This is from Alice B. at Gmail. Pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
She said, I am in a situation at work where it is very difficult for me to work with one person. I am not in conflict, and she put that in quotes, with this person because I have avoided it for 2 years. Mm-hmm. Do I need to show everyone around me that we are in conflict to get past this?
Well, that's a really interesting question. Does she have to show everybody? It's very typical to avoid a person, avoid the situation with that person because we don't know how to address it. Does it mean you have to show the ugly face to everybody in the world? No. My question then becomes, what is it you need from this person? What do they need from you so that y'all can move forward in a very different way? And part of that is this something that you can have a one-on-one conversation with this person? Is this something that this person even knows? You know, because sometimes if we're avoiding people, they're clueless that there's even a conflict going on, right? They'll be like, well, why didn't you say something 2 years ago? We could have talked about this. You're right? And then they're like, well, what do you mean you didn't know that I was avoiding you and that we were in conflict, you know, because you should have known that we were in conflict. And the other person is like, no, I had no idea. And because of our fear, then we just avoid. And then, of course, the other person who's clueless says, I don't know why they are avoiding me. It's been 2 years, and we used to talk every day and go to lunch and do all these things, and then they just stopped talking to me one day, and I'm still trying to figure out why they're not talking to me. And, of course, they're avoiding them. So part of it is unless you're communicating with that person and trying to do some prep work with it, they might be very surprised at what you might have to say to them. But if you want a different relationship, if you want a more productive, constructive relationship with them, I would encourage you to prepare yourself and then have that conversation directly with them as long as they're ready and willing to want to have the conversation with you.
And
that can be private and confidential. It doesn't have to be with anybody else.
That's a good tip and very good question. Very good. Thank you. That I know that would resonate with quite a few people in the workplace and elsewhere. You know, Patty, we are almost out of time for tonight's show. I cannot believe this has gone so quickly. I have enjoyed so much your book, Stop the Dreaded Drama, I love the title, 55 Tips for Ending Destructive Conflict. So if our listening audience were to pick up a copy of your wonderful book, what would they find and how would you suggest they read the book?
The book is a pocket book. It's a pocket-sized book, which is my mini book out of actually Phoenix, Arizona, for that matter. And I would, first of all, what they're going to get is very practical strategies. So this is very practical. You can, and I would suggest reading it all the way through. It's about 65 or so pages. You can read it probably in most definitely less than an hour. And then what you do is, okay, I'm dealing with a situation like the woman who said she's avoiding this person. I want to have a conversation with her. What do I need to do to start thinking about what's triggering me? Why have I not spoken to her? And then what are the things I need to do to actually prepare for the conversation? What might I say or do that will trigger her? What might she say or do that will trigger me? Write it out, what your key messages are. And you can go to any one of those tips one tip or a number of tips and actually apply it immediately. Now, when we talk about preparing for the conversation, there's a number of tips that would go hand in hand if you are wanting to facilitate that. And so that would be what I would recommend, but very, very practical takeaway immediately that you can start using right away.
Very good. Patty, it's been a pleasure, and we're out of time for tonight's show. Let me tell people how to reach you. You can learn more about Patty M. Porter by visiting her at her website, www.conflictconnections.com. Patty's the host of the Texas Conflict blog, talk radio program, and you can go there at also www.texasconflictcoach.com, and you can also get a copy of Patty's book at that website. Now, thanks to all of you for joining and participating in tonight's show. Remember to go to our broadcast page at www.blogtalkradio.com/richerlife and click the blue follow button and show your support for this weekly broadcast. We'll be back with you again next Thursday night. And until then, continue to live a richer life.
You've been listening to Living a Richer Life with Earl and Dr. Charlotte Grant Cobb. Thank you for joining us this evening, and we'll look forward to having you back again at the same time next Thursday.